Now, Leah and Rachel occupy an important place in the scripture and in the unfolding of God's great plan of redemption. We're told in the book of Ruth that these two women, Rachel and Leah, did build up the house of Israel. And they were very important and instrumental in the unfolding of the great purpose of God in redemption. They were sisters. Their father was Laban, the brother of Rebekah. And they were both the wives of Jacob, who was the son of Rebekah. And that would mean that Jacob and Leah and Rachel were cousins. Now, the events that unfolded between them are full of timeless truths and timeless lessons for the people of God in all ages. And I want just to highlight some of the things that stand out in this remarkable history, a history that is full of teaching and full of profit for us. I want you to notice in the first place the manipulation of the marriage. Jacob had gone to Mesopotamia to flee from the wrath of his brother Esau. You remember how he had cheated Esau out of the blessing? How he had pretended by his mother's advice and instruction that he was the oldest son, that he was Esau, and his father, of course, not recognizing the difference, gave the blessing to Jacob. And when Esau found out, Esau was enraged and Jacob had to flee. And so we find him coming now to the land of Mesopotamia. He fled not only from the wrath of his brother, but he fled also because his father had advised him to go back and to take a wife of his own people. And now we find that Jacob coming to Mesopotamia is on the receiving end of the same deceitful and beguiling spirit that he had exercised towards his brother. Because when he came into the family of his mother's brother, we find here that he agreed to work 7 years for Rachel, for the hand of Rachel in marriage. It was the customary thing in the East to give a dowry to the father for his daughter, but Jacob had nothing to give. And so he agreed to work 7 years for Rachel. But when those years were fulfilled and the time came for Jacob to receive Rachel in marriage, Laban beguiled him, giving Leah instead. And Leah was evidently part of the deceitful plot because she would have been veiled on the wedding night, and therefore it was not she was not identified until the next morning. And we're told there in verse 25, it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this that thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me?" He was deceived. This was a deceitful plot. He had agreed to serve for Rachel. And now when those 7 years were finished, Laban beguiles him. Laban deceives him. And he gives Leah instead. Now, Jacob is really experiencing or receiving the same beguiling spirit that he had exercised towards his brother. You remember how he had connived with his mother. It was his mother's suggestion that he should dress, put on the fleece, and that he should go in and pretend that he was Esau. And now we find that the same thing was happening to him. This time Laban is conniving with his oldest daughter to go in the place of Rachel. Now, the solution to this, suggested solution to this situation was polygamy. And Laban said to Jacob, "If you serve another 7 years, then I will give you Rachel. If you serve another 7 years." Look at verse 27. He says to him, "Fulfill her week," that is, Leah, that would refer to the custom of the marriage at that time. It would have lasted a week. The marriage festivities would have lasted a week. And he says, fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also, for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. And the thought there would be that having received Leah in marriage, Jacob raises this with Laban and he says, I agreed to serve for Rachel. And what he is saying here is that if he will serve another 7 years, that will account then for Leah, and he will then receive Rachel. So the thought here is that he didn't have to wait another 7 years before he married Rachel. He received Rachel in marriage at the end of that week, because he'd already served the 7 years, and the agreement was that he would serve yet another 7 years for having received Leah as his wife. So this was the suggested solution, and it was suggested by Laban that he should take both daughters as his wife. But here we find that Laban and Leah do not emerge in a good light from this episode. Laban cheated Jacob, and he ended up getting 14 years of labor out of Jacob for his daughter Rachel. That's essentially what was happening here. Laban was being deceitful. He was being devious. He was cheating Jacob. And in the end, he got 14 years of work. And he knew that Jacob was a hard worker. He knew that he could trust him. He knew that it would be to his benefit to have Jacob in his employment. And so he cheats him, and he gains 14 years. Now that surely reveals the greed that was in the heart of Laban. He was a deceitful man. He connived in order that he might be profited by the service of Jacob. But we also see here the fact that Leah was a partner in the deceit, because she evidently agreed with her father, and she was willing to go along with his plan of beguiling Jacob into entering into the marriage bond. And so the covetousness here of Leah emerges. She was coveting the man that was betrothed to her sister. And that reveals not only her covetous spirit, but it reveals the envy that she had towards her sister Rachel. She envied her because Jacob loved Rachel. We're told that in the verse 18, and Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. So she envied her sister, and she coveted the man who was betrothed unto her sister. So here we find the manipulation of the marriage. And whenever you see these events, whenever you see how deceit and beguilement was the order that was followed, then you will discover as things progress, as they unfold, that disorder will inevitably follow in the wake of that. And that leads us to the strife that emerged between the sisters. The suggested solution of polygamy, the marriage of both sisters to Jacob, in the long term, brought more trouble than good. Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. And we find that all through their married lives, they were seeking, both sisters were seeking for something that they did not have. Leah knew that Jacob loved Rachel more than her. And all her life she sought earnestly to win the love of her husband, but she could not succeed. Now the Lord saw this situation, and he blessed her with children. We read of that in verse 31. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Now that term, hate, there is must be interpreted in the context of verse 30. And we're told that he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah. So there was a degree of affection for Leah, but not the same degree as he had for Rachel. She was loved less, and Leah knew that. And she spent all her life seeking the affection of her husband, seeking to have that affection that he had only for Rachel. And the Lord saw this, and the Lord recognized the situation, and he gave children unto Leah. She has four children here in the latter part of this chapter, and then later on she will have a further three children, seven children in total, six boys and one girl. The Lord compensated her by giving her children. And the Lord was really giving her a great task, a great opportunity, a great door for service. She didn't have that full affection of her husband that he had for Rachel, but instead the Lord had given her children. And in doing that, the Lord was recognizing Leah's situation, recognizing that she wasn't loved as much as Rachel was. And so he gave to her children that her time and her attention would be occupied in the rearing of her family for God. But the sad thing is that Leah didn't recognize that. And instead of devoting her time and attention to her children, she was devoting her time and attention to trying to win the affection of her husband that she would never have. And when you read the story of the sons of Jacob, you will find that out of all the children that were born, both to Rachel and Leah and to their two handmaids, you will find that the children that gave the most trouble were the children born to Leah. And that would indicate that she was spending her time seeking after something which she would never have, instead of devoting the time to what God had called her to do. God had given her children. And yet all the time she's seeking for the affection of her husband. You see that in verse 32 when she had her firstborn Reuben. And she called him this name, Reuben, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now therefore will my husband love me. You see what's in her mind? Her husband's love. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons. Therefore was his name called Levi. You see how this is supreme in her thoughts? She's trying continually to obtain that first place in the affection of her husband's heart. And she's not going to succeed. She had really worked her way into this situation. And Jacob never had that love for Leah. She had agreed with her father's plan, and she had put herself in that situation, and she wasn't going to have that affection. But rather, she should have contented herself to do what the Lord had given her to do in the rearing of her children for God. There was a strife here, and we see it not only in the case of Leah, but we see it in the case of Rachel in verse 1. Of chapter 30, when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. Now remember, Rachel is the one who has in a human context, the supreme affection of her husband. Jacob loved Rachel. The strength of his affection was towards Rachel, but she didn't have any children. And all these years she's watching as her older sister, who cheated her in regard to her husband, as she bears four children. And you see what's happening now? Rachel's heart is so fixed on having children that she becomes envious. And she said unto Jacob, give me children or else I die. Now, that was an unfair demand placed upon Jacob, because children are the heritage of the Lord, and it is the Lord's prerogative to give children. And so she was asking Jacob for something that it was not in his power to give. She said, give me children, or else I die. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? See, she's craving for something that God had not yet given her. And the strange or the striking thing is that she didn't ask for a child, she asked for children. And she said, if I don't have children, I will die. Now the Lord heard this, and he saw the situation of Rachel. He saw the situation that she was in, and he did give her a child. We read later on in chapter 30 that the Lord gave to Rachel, verse 22, God remembered Rachel. And by this time Leah has had six boys and one girl. And all the time Rachel has been watching, she's barren. But God remembered Rachel. And God hearkened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bare a son, and said, God hath taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph, and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. Now she asked for children, and she said, if I don't have children, I'll die. And God gave her a son. She gave her Joseph, which means added. But you see, Rachel is not content. The Lord shall add to me another son. She's wanting more. She's not content. And when you read on in the story, you find that she did have another child. But it was in the giving of that child, in the birth of that child, that she died. Genesis 35 and verse 16. Genesis 35 and verse 16. And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was but a little way to come to Ephrath, and Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, fear not, thou shalt have this son also. And it came to pass, as her soul was in departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. And Rachel died and was buried in the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. Benoni means the son of my sorrow. The son of my sorrow. You see, what she longed for actually became the source of her sorrow. And you remember how she said, give me children or I die. Not just one child, but I must have children. And if I don't have children, then I will die. And the Lord remembered her. And what she had said. And the Lord gave her the two children. But she died in the birth of the second. And what we learn here in this strife between the sisters, Leah continually seeking for the affection of her husband, Rachel seeking for children that she did not have, that Leah had, it reveals the snare of discontentment that we can often fall into in our lives and in our hearts and in our walk with God. We can be seeking those things that God in his will and in his providence has not given us. And for some purpose known only to him, he has withheld. And in that situation, we should do what Paul did when he said to the Philippians, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Let us leave our lot with God. Let us leave our lot with God. And whatever he gives us, let us receive it as that which he has appointed to us, and let us seek to do his will. And if in future days he gives to us what we have desired, then let us rejoice in that. But let us seek to be content. I think that's the lesson that we learn in the strife between these two sisters. One striving for the affection of her husband that she did not have, to the neglect of the children that God gave her. And the other striving for children that she did not have. And then whenever those children were given, they actually, the second son became not only the source of her sorrow, but the source of her own death. Discontentment. Contentment is a great thing. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And we should pray for a contented heart with whatever God has appointed for us. But notice lastly, not only the manipulation of a marriage and the strife between the sisters, notice lastly the grace of God. Because the grace of God shines through in this situation. What God permits does not always reflect or evidence his approval. God may permit something, it doesn't mean to say he approves of it. Here we find polygamy was permitted. But that polygamy was not approved of God. It's not God's accepted order. We ought to see not so much the sin of man in this event, but we ought to see the overruling providence of God and the wonder of his grace. It's very easy to come to the Bible and find where there are faults and failures and use them as a reason for following in the same way. That's not what we should do. Rather, we should come to those things and we should seek for the grace of God overruling. The grace of God overruling in the faults and in the failures of men. God's grace was witnessed in relation to Leah and Rachel both. You see that in chapter 29, verse 31. Leah had forced her way into this marriage. She had beguiled Jacob. She went along with her father's deceitful plot. She put herself in this situation, where there was going to be this strife with her sister continually seeking the affection of her husband. She put herself in this situation. But nevertheless, the Lord saw that Leah was hated, or loved less, and he opened her womb. He was compensating her. That's the grace of God. That's the grace of God. See, she put herself in this situation and she's in a place where she's continually striving for something that she will never have. And yet the Lord in his grace and in his goodness saw that Leah was hated, and he opened her womb and he blessed her with these children. And the case, it's also true in the case of Rachel. As we've seen in chapter 30, verse 22, God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her, and he opened her womb. There's the grace of God being manifested. It reminds us of what the psalmist said, the Lord remembers our frame. He remembers that we are dust. And the Lord is merciful, of tender pity toward us. He blesses us not because of us, but in spite of us. But I think the greatest display of God's grace, abounding in and over the failures that are listed in this record, is the fact that the wife who connived her way into the marriage, who acted deceitfully, covetously, enviously, was one through whom the Savior would descend according to the flesh. Her fourth son was Judah. Genesis 49, Jacob tells us that the Messiah would come from the line of Judah. Genesis 49 and the verse 8. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp from the prey. My son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rise him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Shiloh is a person. The word Shiloh is the root word peace. The Prince of Peace. The one who is peace. The one who will make peace between God and man. He will come. He will come from Judah. Binding his foal onto the vine and his ass's coat onto the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine and his teeth white with milk. There's a prophecy of the cross. The coming Savior. And Jacob was showing the Israelites that the Messiah was going to come from the line of Judah. And we read that in Matthew 1 verse 1 and 2. The generation of Jesus Christ. He was born of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, and of Judah. And Judah was the son of Leah. And there you have it. There, what a wonderful picture. She did not have the affection that she craved. But the child that God gave her was setting in place the earthly line through which the Messiah would come and the blessing of the gospel through him to all nations of the earth. God overruled and he brought about the earthly descent of his own dear son. And it teaches us that where sin abounds, grace doth much more abound. And when we come to the scriptures and we find those times when there are faults and failures, they're there as a warning regarding the sins involved, yes. But they're also there as an example of the abounding grace of God. And we should look for that. We should develop a keen eye that is able to detect the grace of God in the midst of the faults and the sins and the failings of the people of God. For God remembers that we are but dust. He remembers our frame. And he exercises his grace and his mercy toward us. Let's bow together in prayer. Father, bless your word to our hearts.